Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Bring Your Own Kombucha podcast. My name is Erica Bashada, and I am the creator of Bring Your Own Kombucha, which is a podcast, obviously, and it's also a blog. Today, I interview Chanel Kenner. She is a nutritionist, and she's also studying to become a registered dietitian, and she's also pregnant with her first baby. So we talk a lot about pregnancy and women's health and her struggles growing up with an eating disorder. She gives us so much good nutrition advice and insight and how to handle when people critique your weight or your appearance. So I think that everyone's really going to get a lot of value out of this episode. But before we jump in, I just want to talk about the podcast sponsor for today. Today's sponsor is Casandrinos Olive Oil. It's a little known fact that the olive oil industry is not heavily regulated. A lot of companies claim that they're selling 100% olive oil, but in reality, these bottles are tapped with unhealthy oils, such as soybean or rapeseed oil. What I love about Casandrinos is that their olives are hand-picked from century-old GMO-free trees. All of the olives used in their oil are sustainably sourced from their olive orchards in Laconia, Greece, and they are pressed within 48 hours of harvest. They only sell the current harvest of olive oil as opposed to most store-bought brands that are, you know, sitting on the shelf for a couple years. You can find Casandrinos olive oil on Amazon, or you can head to their website, casandrinos.com. That's Casandrinos. And if you use the code kombucha, you'll save an extra 10%. Thank you so much for supporting my podcast, Casandrinos, and thank you to everyone out there who's listening. I really, truly appreciate it. And without further ado, let's get to this interview. Chanel, and welcome to the Bring Your Own Kombucha podcast. I'm so happy to have you on today.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
For those of you that don't know, Chanel is a wife. She's a soon-to-be mama. She's a nutrition coach, and she's a dietitian student. Chanel, do you want to give us just a brief background about yourself, where you grew up, what you're doing these days?
Sure. I'm from Los Angeles originally, grew up in San Diego, and then came back to LA for college and adult life, and I've stayed here ever since. And I, very briefly, my history work-wise, I worked in marketing of all things for over 10 years. So I didn't start out as this like science person, which I think is probably the most interesting thing about my path now, and maybe why it might seem like strange to some people who have known me a long time, because like I was the dancer, I was the creative writer, artistic person, and science was always that grade that I look at my report cards and say, like, what is going on here? I just wasn't interested. I hadn't found something I connected with. But I did really well in math, so marketing and advertising worked really well for me. I worked in search and social marketing, so I had a niche, and it was really awesome being in a space where I had, like, this expertise that I could always, like, find a job. But I just kept getting pulled more and more towards health. Like, I was always into fitness. I grew up an athlete. I was a figure skater for almost a decade. I was a dancer for a long time. I mean, I can't even like do the math on years anymore, but that was a part of my my whole like growing up. So I think my roots have always been in like the athletics. The nutrition piece came later for me. So I actually found nutrition once I realized after doing, you know, half marathons and all these races and entering my early 30s and realizing I had packed on quite a bit. On, you know, a frame, I was always used to being, like, small. I actually, like, side note, I had this moment of looking at a picture in my early 30s, and I remember thinking, like, that's not me, is it? And I had, for me, had, you know, changed a lot physically. But in my mind, I was still, like, you know, a small person. And still,
I think,
like,
we all have that.
I think I have. I actually think, like, and I'm sure we'll talk more about, like, my more serious history, but I think I have reverse body dysmorphia as an adult, which I'm like, I should keep that in check too, because that could be a problem, like overconfidence or something. But I had this moment of clarity of like, okay, I'm in my early 30s. Like, maybe it's a time that I can't just like drink beers whenever I want and like be eating buffalo wings and all these things that I love just whenever. Like, I should probably figure this out. And when my husband, now husband, proposed to me, that was the real wake-up call where I was like, okay, if I'm going to start anything, I should start now. But I don't want this to just be like a one-stop shop. I don't want this to be, I'm getting fit for my wedding. Mm-hmm. I want this to be a lifestyle. I want this to be something that I'm actually, you know, committing to. So that's really, that was the real catalyst, was, you know, getting engaged and wanting to be a healthier, better person for myself, but for my husband, and knowing that having a family, that it would set the tone for, you know, how I raise my kids. So that was sort of how I fell into this. And then I just quit marketing cold turkey. I mean, I literally just was like, I'm not doing this anymore. I talked about it with my husband, but I think it seemed a little like out of left field at my actual company, because they're like, so you're just not doing this anymore, huh? And I was like, yeah, no, I think I just need to, like, it's the only way for me to actually go into something else, because, you know, otherwise I was going to have to do the side hustle and I would be hating my day job. And I'm like, if I can't give 100% even to something I'm not that into anymore, then it's not fair to anyone. So yeah, last summer I was just like, peace out. I'm in this world now. And that's what I've done ever since.
I feel like, isn't that the dream? I feel like 99% of America just wants to go in, you know, quit cold turkey and then go on their dream path, which is what you're doing.
Yeah, and I had to, the opportunity had to be there. It's not something I could have done if, you know, my husband and I hadn't talked about it, planned it. I had saved, you know, quite a bit with my work. And so I've actually, you know, haven't had a month since I went off into this nutrition world where I haven't had clients, where I haven't had money coming in. And that's been a huge, I think, boost for me, is knowing that I'm able to, you know, not necessarily support a family at this point, but being able to support my own, you know, stuff going on. And so, but I think that if I didn't have that, I would probably rethink it. I'm way too practical. Like, being a creative person, I think I could never pursue that full time. Like in my past, like when I wanted to write and stuff, it's not bringing in income, if it's not, you know, sustainable, then I'm like, what am I doing? So, so that's been like a positive with it. It's kind of like, it made sense. It was just the right time and things were working out. So
what are your credentials as a nutritionist? And then also, I feel like a lot of people have this question. What's the difference between a nutritionist and a dietitian? Because you are a nutritionist right now and you're in school to become a dietitian, correct?
Yes. Those are great questions. And actually, love that you started out with this, because it's a huge misconception people have. And I think a question that gets asked a lot. The thing, it depends on the state, but you're in New Jersey, I believe, from California, most states, to be a dietitian, you have to be registered in your state. You cannot call yourself a dietitian. I believe that's actually every state. But nutritionist is not a licensed term, so anyone can call themselves a nutritionist.
Oh, interesting.
As a coach, you know, using nutritionist or nutrition coach interchangeably doesn't make a big difference. But to actually have that RDN, which is what they're using now. So most dietitians are calling themselves registered dietitian nutritionists. So it helps kind of bridge the gap and provide clarity on what they're doing. Because some people are like, dietitian. Like, what, it's a nutritionist, but with, like, you know, a lot of school, pretty much. It's, so as a nutrition coach, I'm certified through a program, Precision Nutrition. I was originally going to go down more of an athlete route, so I wanted to work with athletes, and then I kind of switched gears, and I'm more on, like, the research side of things now. So when I did that, I went with a coaching program that was geared towards personal training and nutrition, but it was really great. I mean, I was crazy. I sat down, I studied every day, treated it like it was, like, a course in school, and went through it pretty quickly because I wanted to start working. So it wasn't, like, timed or anything. It's really, like, at your own pace. But at the end, you get a nice, like, credential, and you get access to, you know, a lot of information through their blog. And the guys who started it, you know, they have PhDs. So it's created by doctors. So that was important to me because I wanted to make sure while coaching that I had gone through a program that was respected and
definitely
led by, you know, people within the medical and health community. And as far as dietetics goes, I'm basically just doing science for the rest of my life is what it feels like. I have a lot of, it's really comparable to more like pre-med. So you do all of the biologies, all of the chemistries, all of the science. And ultimately you end up taking when you're done with that, you have to do a 1200 hour internship in a clinical setting. So most people do a hospital. So you're doing everything from like serving food to, you know, basically like helping other dietitians in the hospital, getting like your feet wet. And once those hours are done, then you can take the exam, which is like a lifelong exam, but you have to do continuing education. So it appealed to me just because I felt like if I'm going to help people long-term with health, I want to take this further and really take it seriously and have the science background. To everyone's different, but to call yourself a dietitian, you know, like when someone says that, they've gone through like years of school, and it's pretty intense, but I enjoy it.
I love that. Yeah, I feel like especially on Instagram, you see a lot of people posting that they're a nutritionist or a health coach. And I know for me as a layman, like I didn't know the difference. And then I saw somebody else post about how dietitians actually have to do, you know, 1200 hours. And I was like, wow, I never realized that nutritionists and dietitians were so different. They do the same, you know, in some ways they do the same thing, but their backgrounds are just so different.
Yeah, it's a requirement now to have your master's. It used to be able to get it at, like, the bachelor's level, but they're changing the whole program around. So so it's much more, you know, it's similar to, like, physical therapy or something where you're definitely, you know, putting in the time, and depending on what you want to do, like, I like the research side. So right now I'm kind of like, oh, I'll just keep doing the studying forever and, you know, go on to my PhD eventually, but we'll see. Once I have a kid, we'll see. Priorities change, so.
Oh, totally.
I tend to be a little overly ambitious, like, future foresight. Like, my current sight is, like, I'm not sitting, like, on the ground. My feet aren't on the ground. That's the best way to put it.
Well, thank you for explaining that. I wanted to just shift over for a little bit and talk about, because you are just in such a healthy place right now. I mean, you have the science background, you have a thriving business, and especially with, you know, the Instagram and your website, they're just a wealth of knowledge. Like, I literally, when I have a question, I'll go to your website, or like today, your Instagram story was comparing ice cream, which I totally appreciated, the vegan ice cream and the dairy ice cream, and, you know, one had more sugar than the other, and just because something's vegan doesn't mean that it's the healthier option or the better option when it comes to sugar and things like that. So I definitely appreciate what a wealth of information you are. But you did talk about how in the past you struggled with your health. So did you want to touch on that a little bit?
Sure. I think I went to a wellness event last summer where someone said, and I actually had to write it down because I was like, I love this. People don't really find health and wellness without going through some sort of something painful. It's usually either you have your own digestive issues or, you know, some sort of disease or something that has led you to this space. And I think that's so true. I mean, there are definitely people who, you know, can find it just through wanting to be healthier or, you know, trying to achieve certain goals. And that's, I think that's great too. But I think more often than not, people who choose this as a career path, it's guided by something painful. And I struggled for many years with anorexia and it actually almost killed me. So it was a really tough period in my adolescent years through teen years. And I think dealing with the mental aspects of that, even into my 20s, it's definitely a long haul to get over all of the elements. And it's such a misunderstood disorder, disease, just like a lot of all of the eating disorders, I think, are so misunderstood that it's a mental illness. And I think people don't often get that it's like struggling with anxiety or an addiction or something that is, it's not just about trying to like be skinny. I mean, I was not a big girl. I was an athlete. I was ice skating. It was just a confusing time and being an adolescent, not having like the foundation of, you know, emotional maturity and ability to handle like life. That was kind of my way of controlling it. And so I was hospitalized for inpatient for four months, my freshman year of high school. And I struggled but I really wanted to get better. I think that's a key, like whatever people are going through, and this is something I definitely apply in my coaching, is that people have to have that want. Without that, you have nothing. And so I fought, like I fought really hard, and my poor parents, like to this day, I'm always like, man, I feel like really guilty for that period of my life. But like at some point you have to let it go and realize that, you know, it's things in our past like can't dictate like what we're doing now. And I feel like I've come so far since then, and to be able to apply that experience, like that really painful experience, and turn it into something positive has been so rewarding for me, because, you know, I don't look at each person I work with or any person I talk to on social media or in real life, I don't look at that as like here's a one-size-fits-all approach, where if I hadn't gone through something like that, I don't know if I'd be as able to like be empathetic to, you know, the personal painful experience of sometimes just trying to like be okay with who you are, because that's really at the root of a lot of these, you know, food issues people have, whether it's a full-blown eating disorder or it's, you know, shades of it, some form of disordered eating or just not feeling comfortable in your skin. It's never just about like the food or about, you know, wanting to be a certain size. It's like, okay, well, what's driving that? And so yeah, long story short, I'm like thankful for that experience, even though it was hard, because it really shaped who I am now and what I'm able to bring to what I do professionally.
Thank you for sharing that. I know that's really tough to talk about. And what would be your advice for someone who is struggling in a similar circumstance, like from your point of view, since you were able to overcome it and you're doing so well now?
Right. I would say it's a daily practice. I think anyone can easily slip in, you know, any direction if they let something get the best of them. So while I'm in a good place now, it's a daily decision to be in a good place because I want to be. And I think that's the first step, is making make sure that it's something that you're ready for and that you want and that you're not alone. I think it can be a really isolating experience because, you know, it's a small percentage of the population, still quite a bit of people who suffer from it, but it's, you know, getting help is, I think, just so important, like, when you're ready for it. But yeah, it's a choice. It really is, like, every day you have to, like, make small steps once you decide that you're ready for help and reach out to people because, you know, I've actually had a number of people reach out on various platforms, you know, thanking me for coming out and being open about it. And I realized, like, I have a responsibility as someone who, who's gone through what I have and being where I am now, I have a responsibility, I think, to share that experience and to be a space or an outlet for someone to talk to if they don't feel comfortable doing that themselves. Like, maybe someday they will, but, you know, everyone's kind of, like, on a different place in their path. And so, but, yeah, it's such a tough one because it's such a personal experience that...
Yeah, it's definitely really hard to put yourself out there, especially in a situation like that. But like you said, I feel like it's so beneficial for people to hear that story. And sometimes people are in denial. So even hearing your story, they'll be able to connect with it and, you know, seek help. And so shifting over to the mama mentality, this kind of ties in. Since you're pregnant, I kind of wanted to talk about weight gain during pregnancy. I think a lot of women fear gaining weight once they get pregnant, and that can kind of take you down a rabbit hole, especially when you have that prior struggle in your life. So how have you felt about gaining weight during your pregnancy?
It's a love-hate relationship. You know, to be honest, I don't think anyone likes stepping on the scale every time they go to the doctor and realizing that, you know, no idea what the numbers are going to be. So yeah, I mean, it's not the most fun, but knowing that it's healthy and it's what your body needs and letting your body kind of dictate, I think when we try to interfere with that process, it can have obviously very negative results. So I've been very happy that I haven't had the appearance of gaining what I have. I've been lucky, knock on wood, in that regard to this point, but, you know, it's just an acceptance and knowing that it's temporary. I think that's helped a lot, is knowing that, like, I'm growing a human and I need to give this human everything it needs to grow and thrive and into the world as healthy as possible. So it's not about my vanity or about, like, the numbers. It's really more just about, you know, what my body has decided that it needs to do. So yeah, I just let it go. At this point, I'm like, whatever the recommendations are, it varies, and I don't know that I'll stay within it, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. I feel like once you're pregnant, you just kind of have to have that mentality that, you know, everything that you're consuming is for the baby, and obviously be, you know, mindful of that, but I definitely think the body positivity that you give off is very inspiring.
Thank you. It's not always easy. I mean, pregnancy is definitely a time when people get very opinionated, and I've actually, I've been open about, you know, the fact that I carried a small bump for so long that I actually got negative feedback from that, as if there was anything I could do to help. Or as if, like, my exercise was somehow, like, contributing. And I would love to say that I had a small bump because I exercised. But I'll tell you, I've been in Soul Cycle class next to women who, at that point, were as far along as I am now and were, like, bigger and working
You have so much on your plate. I mean, I can't even imagine doing all of that and being pregnant.
Don't we all, though? It's, like, hard to find the time, but yeah.
So, as a nutritionist, what does your, I don't want to use the term diet, but, like, what does your meal planning look like, and how has it shifted now that you're pregnant?
Right. It's definitely been a work in progress. It changes. It's, I've gone through periods of not being, like, as healthy. Like, I think I was telling you before the podcast, like, my first trimester, if biscuits sounded good, I was eating biscuits. If I needed to make my husband run to Taco Bell and get me a Mexamel, like, that was happening. So, at every stage, I mean, it really depends on the person. I've never experienced that, like, pregnancy appetite people talk about, maybe a few days here and there where I'm, like, really hungry, but I've kind of had to navigate that because I think it is a big misconception people have, and I try so hard not to roll my eyes when people say you're eating for two because you're not, and I just kind of, like, nod and say, yeah, you know, but no.
Wait, let's, like, talk about the numbers for a second. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like I was reading that first trimester, you eat normal. Second trimester, you are supposed to have an additional 300 calories. Is that correct? And then third is, like, 500 calories.
That's what they recommend. But again, it varies by person. I think it's, you definitely need more, but, like, the composition of what you're eating is really the most important thing. And, like, listening, obviously, to your hunger cues.
You're working out, I guess, having a little bit more.
Yeah, and so, like, I'm still active, and I try to maintain that. So I'm definitely not sitting there, like, counting my calories. I'm counting my macros, though, because I want to have protein, you know, the right portion of protein and fats and carbohydrates. It's very important. So I think it's, my focus has been more on the nutrients. What am I putting on my plate versus how much, how many calories? But it's always kind of in the back of my mind because I can do the math and, like, pretty quickly after going through a couple nutrition classes. So I'm aware, but I don't use that as kind of like it's a guiding tool. But I think that's an important thing if, you know, someone who's pregnant wants to gain what they need, but keep it within, you know, reasonable limits. It's just listening to your body and recognizing that, you know, the ice cream is fine. Like, trust, I have that Family Wins ice cream in my freezer right now, and trust me, I eat it. But only after I've had, you know, a complete meal of all of the things I need, because then at least I know the ice cream's for me. So, like, whenever people say, like, oh, yeah, that's for your baby. No, the baby. And let me tell you, I have a really big baby right now, so I don't know where it's coming from, but apparently Kale can make a very, like, she's got, like, these little chubby cheeks already, like, in the ultrasound. Aww. Crazy. And I'm like, that did not come from Kale. I don't know what that is. But yeah, it's the nutrients are really, really, really important. So you're eating nutrients for two. You're not eating necessarily calories for two.
I can totally appreciate that. What about some tips for non-pregnant women who want to nourish their body and stay within a healthy, not just weight range, but just in a healthy mindset and in good health?
Yes, first rule is let go of comparisons. It's, you know, there's so many, like, hashtag goals all over Instagram, and it's like, you know, I think it's fun. Fun is kind of a, you know, like, having goals is important, but when we, like, look at other people and say, oh, I want her abs, or I want her, we have to be realistic with our own bodies and, like, embrace that. And so I think ultimately goals should really be built around
you also posted something the other day. It was like a picture of two different people, and they were the same exact weight, but they carried the weight differently. They looked totally different. I forget what the weight was. Maybe like 135 or something.
And, oh, yeah. You're talking about Kelsey Wells.
Yes.
I love her. Yeah.
I just thought that was so interesting because I, you know, have like a number in my head of like the perfect weight that I was at one point in time and whatever. And I feel like, okay, maybe that's not realistic once we get older and go into our bodies and everything. You know, you're not always going to be that perfect high school weight. But on another token, like that weight might have been really healthy on me, but could be really unhealthy on somebody else. It really just depends on like your size, your height, your structure. I just think it's so interesting how you were talking about that. And it really is true that everybody carries weight differently.
Yeah, people carry it differently. And I think also, you know, part of that realistic expectation, and using Kelsey as an example, you know, she, they took her, that was a 4-year span. So those, she posted like side by side photos. Like one was her like after having a baby, like literally just a month or so. And then the next was her reaching her goal weight, which was like super low. And then showing her now as like this super fit, you know, she's like this fit model trainer, you know, I'm not sure. She's an Instagram like star, pretty much.
Yeah.
But her posts are very inspirational in that way, where she talks a lot and she talks about her weight to show that it is just a number, and that she weighs the same as she did like after having a baby, but her body is rocking. Like she has buns of steel that are amazing. I would say goals, but I'm like, that's a little too much effort for me at this point. Like that's her job.
Right. Right.
But it really did, I think, make a great point on that we can't focus so much on that. It's when I actually recompositioned my body, like before my wedding, I weighed more than I did as a dancer, but I was in the same size. I would say my clothes looked better on me because I was proportioned better. And it was just, so it's like your goals can shift too, like to set your mind on one thing and be so adamant about it. It doesn't leave room for like the journey towards it, nor does it leave room for you to kind of experiment like with what it could be if you were different. And you might surprise yourself with like how much better you feel and look by like maybe having a few extra pounds, or you know, just having entirely different goals entirely that don't revolve around just the numbers.
Totally. And I can definitely appreciate that. I think that especially the body positivity that you are giving off on Instagram is just wonderful. And when I saw that picture, I was like, I have to bring that up because I feel like that's something that so many people just overlook. So I have a few other questions for you in the nutrition realm. Adaptogens. I feel like they are like this really trendy health and wellness smoothie edition right now. But like, what are they? Why did they come out of like left field almost? Like, why are they so trendy right now?
Well, they've been around for a long time.
Right, that's why I can't figure it out.
Like, ancient, like Asian medicinal. I think they're called. It's like a phytotherapy. I think it's the category that it's in. So it's like herbs, plants, things that you use to aid in like medicinal. They're like medicinal aids that come from plants. And I don't know, they really took off in like the health and wellness space, but it's like a little insane now because I
benefits of golden milk?
Oh, yeah. So the benefits of these adaptogens, so they're supposed to help fight stress in the body. And, I mean, I can get, like, really technical with it. I actually did a little research on this because I knew we'd be talking about this. But basically, and I'm, like, learning about this right now, too. I'm in the middle of learning about the brain. So the hypothalamus is, like, a key player in homeostasis. Our body's always fighting for that. So whatever function is going on, it's like our body just wants to be balanced. We do so many things to it to get it out of balance, whether it's, you know, poor sleep habits or, you know, the things we're putting in our body, toxins, either from food or, you know, chemicals and the things that we're breathing in. So all of these things, like, are just compounding, like, normal stress that our body is adapted to deal with. Before we added all of these things, we were just, like, out there hunting and gathering, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we were afraid of, like, lions. Like, our threat during the day was not, like, meeting deadline and whether or not, you know, this person cutting us off is going to cause an accident on the road. It was literally, like, life and death. So in our modern life, we've created all this stuff. And so the idea is that adaptogens can help us kind of regain that homeostasis and help things like our hypothalamus, our pituitary gland, we have quite a few glands that are involved in this function, and just helping them operate better because they are highly affected by outside influence. So that is kind of the long of the short of it. I can get really deep, but I'm not going to.
So for somebody who just wants to start dabbling in it, what are, like, one or two adaptogens that you would say are good, like, starters?
I think ashwagandha and cordyceps. You want to give them a try. I wouldn't do them at the same time. But they have sort of different purposes. I think that's ultimately the thing is you want to, if one is more focused on stress, which ashwagandha is, it's more of a calming, it's more of a calming component, whereas cordyceps is, it can lower cortisol. Also, I think it helps reduce testosterone, like, in men. So if you're having, like, issues with things like that, that's a good one to try. I mean, ginseng is one that's been around forever. Like, everyone knows, you know, improvements to memory. But I would start there. I mean, you can go into, like, holy basil, which I think is anti-aging or supposed to be anti-aging. But you can also just sleep more. as with anything, these can be tools to help, but I don't think they're, like, the end-all be-all answer to people's problems. We can't put them on this, like, pedestal as a holy grail of being healthy. Your actions still have to follow suit. So if you're not sleeping well, if you're not, you know, eating healthy and exercising and doing these other things, well, then what good is, like, an ashwagandha going to be? It's like all things in balance. I think that's key.
I totally agree with that. So about a year ago, I was reading something and I saw adaptogens and I was like, oh, like, I really want to give these a try. And instead of doing my research on it, I kind of just, like, bought a couple and I was like, let me try them out. Definitely not the appropriate approach, right? So I purchased Moringa. I don't know if I'm saying that correctly. And I was like, okay, let me throw it in my green smoothies. Like, totally makes sense. And then I started doing a little bit of research on it. And I found that it's actually not good for fertility. It acts as a natural birth control. And there's actually a couple of studies that I was reading that say it actually, like, harms your fertility. And being in, like, my childbearing years, and the whole point of me becoming healthier was because I was turning 30 and I wanted to start having kids soon. I was like, oh my God, like, how... That was, like, a little trap that I set for myself that I didn't even realize. Like, you can't just grab things off the shelves because you think it's healthy or trendy.
Right.
So do you know of any other adaptogens that we should be weary of, or, you know, might have like those side effects? Like you said one before that lowers testosterone, like that obviously wouldn't be a good one for men.
For men. I mean, I think it's with all things in moderation, I don't know of any specifically. I'd have to like really research them. But I think it's great that you did that research, and I actually highly advise like everyone to do that, to, you know, not read the sensationalized headlines that are like coconut oil kills, like that is
totally.
Not, you know, but looking at, you know, science research papers, things on PubMed, you can always trust PubMed because, you know, these are supported by the community and they have to go through, you know, massive amounts of approvals and stuff before they're able to be published. So, yeah, but like I advise people to do that because
prior to taking it, right? Not how I did it.
And just like how like peppermint, you know, another one like peppermint oil, I found out is something that you want to avoid when you're pregnant. And I was like, well, thank goodness I haven't really done peppermint oil. Because, you know, it's, I think it can have an adverse effect, and I don't know the specific, I need to look it up, but I heard that and I was like, okay, well, good to know. But I think there are a lot of things that, you know, we can consume, adaptogens or otherwise, that are, that we assume are quote unquote healthy, whether it's because, you know, someone's promoting it and it sounds really great. It's kind of like the, well, on paper maybe, but like, what is this really doing? And I've actually had quite a few people in recent months reach out about hormone issues and, you know, hormone balance, whether it's, you know, they're trying to get pregnant or like in the, you know, near future, but they haven't had a period in like a year. And you're like, okay, that's, you know, that's problematic. And, you know, you have, it's hard to really pinpoint the source. I really recommend getting a doctor involved for things like that. When I read people just trying to cure with like, you know, herbs and things, and like, I'm like, oh no, like you need to get tests. Like if you're not having a period for a year, like there's something going on there that, you know, it's beyond just your own like fixing it. Like I'm always of the like school of thought that anything, you should try to do things yourself to an extent that you can fix. But if it's something that is medically, you know, a problem, like not having a period, you need to get a doctor involved for that. If you're having, you know, digestive issues, these are things that need to be first diagnosed, and then you have a place to start. And then you can say, okay, I'm going to implement this aspect of, you know, medicine or something I need to take, and then my healthy sort of lifestyle habits. But I think that's a big one, like, whatever you're taking, making sure that you're listening to your body, like what is it doing to you? You've researched it first and foremost, and then it's not causing like any other sort of issues, because then you're, it defeats the whole point. But I think a lot of people are like getting almost too crazed about health in some ways, and, you know, for losing that balance aspect, and it's, you know, it has to be a balance. Like you have to have the cookie sometimes, otherwise when you do have the cookie, your body's gonna go crazy and it's gonna like have a meltdown. It's, I really believe firmly in that. If you're not having like, you know, your moments of joy, then it's, you know, all the ashwagandha in the world isn't gonna help you.
right. No, I totally get that, and I feel like it's so easy to just jump on board with whatever health and wellness bloggers promoting, just because it sounds healthy, but there definitely should be a purpose in what you're taking. You shouldn't just be taking it to take it, kind of like I did with the Moringa, and lesson learned. So how do you take your adaptogens? I know you said you aren't taking them when you're pregnant, but what's your, like, go-to way? Do you throw it in a smoothie? Are you more of like the coffee person? How do you incorporate it?
A little bit of both. So I like to make, I mean, one of my really favorite massive amounts of it. So I do make lattes out of that, like a little, and I kind of make my own concoction right now, where I just put like turmeric with pepper. And that's one thing to know too. Another layer, it gets super complicated, right? That's why it's like, it's so hard to like actually be healthy, because you're like, oh, I'm eating all these healthy things. But did you know that curcumin, which is like the main active ingredient in turmeric, it's not as bioavailable if you don't have black pepper with it, or pepper. So,
oh, I didn't know that.
Together, and it's like, but the same goes for like certain vitamins. It's like in mineral, like iron becomes more bioavailable when you consume vitamin C with it. And also calcium actually acts as an inhibitor to the absorption. So it's like the layers get super deep in that. That's why I went the clinical route, because I want to know, like, I want to get like into the, you know, to the meat of how things react together and, you know, like the chemical, like reactions of those things. But I mean, people can get sick if they're eating too much, you know, vitamin A. It's understanding the difference between the, you know, fat soluble versus water soluble vitamins, how much you need of each of those. I mean, it gets super like super deep. So like when I'm making a latte, I'm thinking about, you know, from my mind, you know, my perspective, I'm like, okay, I need to mix this and this to get the most out of this. But then I also need to like make sure I add this to it, because that's going to boost this. And so it's like trying to describe how my mind works when I'm making one of these is like insane. But that's like my approach to like one of those lattes. Or for the teas, it's like if I'm having an ashwagandha, like the 4-sigmatic in the morning, I know that I'm not going to mix it with anything else in the morning that could alter my you know, I'm not going to have a coffee then with it, because that's kind of defeating the purpose, because coffee is, you know, diuretic. It's also, you know, due to the caffeine, it's going to raise my cortisol levels and all of that. So it's like thinking about like the time of day and like what else I'm having. And it sounds like super complicated. It really is like a split second kind of game time decision. I'm not sitting there like writing on a notepad like, oh my god, like I need to like mix this. It gets easier with time, but it is something people really like need to think about, because bioavailability, absorption, these things are impacted by the combinations of things that we're putting together, not food mixing, like the whole idea of eating proteins and carbs. Like whoever started sharing that like drives me crazy. You can eat carbohydrates and protein together. Your body is not like working on one and then, you know, it's working on them at the same time in different capacities. So, but like mixing actual nutrients and the way that they interact with each other, I think like not enough people really know about that.
Mm-hmm.
And make the sort of decisions that ultimately are like always the healthy, even if what they're having is healthy, if that makes sense.
No, that definitely makes sense. I'm shocked. I'm like trying to recall my last turmeric latte, if it had pepper in it.
Well, that's the nice thing about golden milk, is that it actually has it mixed. So if you look at the ingredients, you know, the brands that like get it right, they have that already mixed in there for you. And I think it has some dates and stuff like that.
Okay, but that's a little bit more reassuring.
Yeah, so it's like there are definitely brands you can get, you know, and I would be drinking that if I wasn't pregnant. That like if you look in the back and you're like, okay, they're mixing the pepper, they know what they're doing, this is like cool, I don't have to think about it, it takes that whole process away. But when you're trying to construct it yourself like a little mad scientist, it adds a whole layer of so maybe do the like pre-mix thing and don't do the like crazy thing I do.
Do you construct it yourself because you're pregnant, or
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because I mean, with things like that, I just don't really, it's not that I don't trust it, I just want to be in control of how much I'm having, and yeah, it's really, I'm a control freak, I can't help it.
No, that totally really makes sense. I mean, you have such that strong health background that you know what should and shouldn't be in there. So I have one last question for you. Actually, kind of two questions. What's your favorite kombucha flavor?
Oh, gosh. That's a good one. I really like the health aid, the ginger. I think it's ginger lemon, right?
Uh-huh.
That one is great, except for, I have to say, like, I had one explode in my car one time. And so, like, if I can give any, like, warning on kombucha to anyone that's not health related, it's just don't drink kombucha in your car. Because it can explode.
Scarred you for life. Me at work. I'm like sitting at my desk with a bunch of other attorneys around, and I open my drink, it totally explodes. They're like looking at me like, what are you drinking and what just happened?
You're like, well, my Instagram handle is and
you guys didn't get the memo.
I basically bring the same party to work.
And is it safe for pregnant women to have kombucha?
That's a great area. I think that's a personal preference, and it's one that I don't get super opinionated about because I think it is up to the person. I think brands that are sold in the store, like a Health Aid or a GT or a Kavita, I love Kavita. I actually have had some of their probiotic drinks while I'm pregnant, just not, I mean, if anything, I would say definitively, like, not every day. I don't think that's necessarily something. There are other ways to get probiotics that are super healthy, like Greek yogurt. That's when I'm always, like, blasting all over social because it has other benefits, too. I mean, 18 grams of protein in, like, one little 6-ounce container. So, I mean, you need more protein when you're pregnant. I mean, you need protein regardless. So if that's something that, you know, you need more of, I would say do the probiotic with the protein benefit. If you don't do dairy, there are other options, like Kite Hill is another. I'm not sure about the protein value there, but yeah, with the drinks, it's like really up to the person and what they want to, like, I can't sit here. I've had some, so I would be like total hypocrite, so.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. You were such a wealth of information and a joy to talk to.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell everybody where they can find you on social?
Sure. I am Fit Fab Well by Chanel on everything.
Love it. And I feel like I'm definitely going to have you back on because we could literally talk for like 5 hours.
Oh, my God.